All right, here Lawrence is.
Hey, bro, they said that you believe anything out there besides God.
Right.
That would be idolatry.
Yeah.
What about UFOs?
That
fall under the same category as something else out there?
That's a good question. That's a good question. If a person believes that there are other natural phenomena out there, like other intelligences or creatures that were created by God that we don't know of in outer space, that would not constitute a violation of this precept, because then you're simply saying that God's creation extends beyond the Earth and beyond the our planetary system, and that there are other creations out there somewhere in the galaxies that are part of God's creation, except than us or something like that. If a person did believe that, then there would be nothing wrong with that. It's not a violation, because he's not really saying there is another force like God, but he's not saying it's a supernatural force. He's saying there are other creations, and he's saying perhaps, for instance, some scientists speculate, although there's no evidence for it, but sometimes scientists speculate that there is life somewhere in the galaxies, somewhere in the distant, remote corners of the universe. I use that expression figuratively. But there's nothing wrong with such speculation, because the person is simply saying that there are other creatures that God made. I mean, even though one would say, well, how come it's not mentioned in the Bible? That is not necessarily a proof, because the Bible really is giving an exposition of creation, essentially, vis-a-vis man. It doesn't mean that it had to mention every single detail in the text of the creation in the first 6 days. So that would not be a violation. But here is where you get into a very fine point. And in order to answer that point, another question. The question is, can a person take medications, for instance, that certain things that people would do, weird things that people would do when they're ill. Some of the things we still have today, a lot of them have vanished, but let's say wearing a bracelet, some kind of, the person has arthritis and they wear some kind of a charm or something, okay? Is that a violation? Well, the answer is that it depends on the mental state or the reasoning of the individual. We really are obliged to follow knowledge. That's an obligation of the Torah. If a person is ill, he must go to the physician. All right. Now, let's say, and you're not permitted to use any kind of cures that the Talmud refers to as cures of the Amorites. That's exactly what the Bible means over here. Like, you're not permitted to use mystical kinds of cures. That is against the Torah. But so now the question comes in: what kind of comes about? What is a mystical cure? I mean, is it anything that's not proven by science? Well, let's say I want to wear a copper bracelet. I have arthritis. I want to wear a copper bracelet. Is that considered a mystical cure, which would be prohibited, or is it not considered a mystical cure? Now, the answer to that is a precise answer. But it is dependent upon the framework of the person, and this is the way it goes. If the person thinks that there is some magic in the bracelet, some supernatural force in the bracelet that's curing him, then it is definitely prohibited. That's the cures of the Amorites. That, again, is supernatural force, and you're maintaining there's some other force out there besides God, which means you're not whole and not complete. You believe in other forces. But if the person says, look, there could be a natural reason why this copper bracelet does help my arthritis. science at this point doesn't know the reason, but that doesn't mean that they might not discover that somehow or other the atoms in the bracelet do have some kind of an effect, or perhaps it's an electromagnetic field that's created, or something that might affect the arthritic joints or whatever. And if a person thinks that he's doing it because not everything that we know works can be explained by science. We are the human mind. God said, commanded man. He says when he created him, he said that you should conquer. Conquest through science, through knowledge, through technology, and man plods along slowly and makes new headway. That's part of his mandate was given to him from the first day. So this is part of the scientific process, which the Torah endorses. It only tells the Ben Israel that he must stop that on the Sabbath, but the rest of the week he's supposed to progress. So this is fine. This is all in line with man, God giving man his divine image and his ability to uncover the secrets of nature, how they work, to take part in God's wisdom, insofar as his human mind capable of. This is all wonderful. This is all what the Torah wants us to do. But we know that we make progress in slow steps. So if a person says, well, look, I'm not going to wait around for science to find out that copper bracelet works. It works for me, and it could be the reason escapes science at this point, but maybe 100 years from now they'll find out the reason. If you do it in that frame of mind, then it's 100% possible. Then it's not considered the ways of the Amorites, medications, mystical medicine. But if a person believes that there is something, they wear something around their neck, and they think that this thing has some kind of a power, that it's a supernatural power that is curing the disease, then the person is in serious violation, because then they're maintaining there is a supernatural force, and there is other than God. You see, that's where the violation comes in. In answering your question, it's important to know the mindset of the individual. If the person is looking, and here's where you cross, you cross boundaries, because there are respectable scientists that are curious about life and intelligence other than human. By the way, we do believe that there are intelligences other than humans, and we say they were, Talmud, the oral law explains they were created on the second day. Those are angels, which means that there are intelligences, existences that are superior to us in intelligence and understand more about the about nature and the universe than we do. They have a higher level of knowledge of God. The angels don't have their own supernatural powers. I mean, we don't believe that. We believe their existence is on a different level, but they don't exercise their own supernatural powers. The only one that is God, that is the source of all of all existences and all creation. But if a respectable scientist is investigating this phenomenon, there's nothing wrong with that. On the other hand, you have people that are mystically inclined and believe there are all kinds of forces and powers all over, and therefore they believe that these aliens are endowed with the belief in aliens is based upon the belief in the supernatural. If the belief in aliens is based upon the belief in the supernatural, then the person is not being complete with God. Then he's positing other forces. If it's a legitimate, scientific, intelligent question or investigation, then there is nothing wrong with it. And if a person is studying a UFO from a scientific point of view, there could be other beings that are more advanced than us, created by God. There's nothing wrong with that. But if it's catering to the supernatural, then he is in violation. So it depends on the mindset of the person who is conjecture. Okay, it depends what type of conjecture it is. Just like in the case of the medicine. Okay, does that answer your question?
Yes, that answers the
question. Okay.
Lars said, "Say yes."
Okay. Any more questions, or should I go on?
No, I think that was adequate.
Okay.
All right.
So now we'll go on. So now. now we see Rabbi Josi's proof. Rabbi Josi's proof is that we have a principle that is not argued. No one argues in this principle. None of the scholars are arguing this principle, which obviously indicates that it was received directly from Sinai and remained in its pure form in the days of the Talmud, which is that whenever the Bible speaks of a punishment, it has to have been a previous crime. So therefore, Rabbi Josi says, from this piece of Deuteronomy, namely 18:12, where it states that God is chasing out these nations because of these abominations, you must say that they were in violation. They were doing something wrong. Because otherwise, how could God punish them and chase them out of their land? Okay? And that would seem to be an ironclad argument. I mean, it's difficult, really, to argue with Rabbi Josi. His logic seems impeccable. Okay? And therefore, he says it must be that the seven laws of Noah include all these violations, magic, witchcraft, mediums, seeking the dead, etc., etc., seances, all these type things. Must be that that's included, because that's precisely what the verse says. They're being chased out. They're being punished. Isn't that a punishment to be chased out of your land? Obviously, it's not a good thing. It's a bad thing. It means God does not consider them as worthy of existence in their land, and he's removing them. Okay? That is his argument. And yet, by the way, the prevailing opinion is that is against Rabbi Josi. And that is that that sorcery and magic and witchcraft does not constitute a violation of the seven laws. Now the question, of course, is seven. If sorcery is a violation, so why isn't it more than seven? But this, I think, we've been educated enough to be able to respond to, and that is that, as we mentioned before, it is not seven laws in the system of the 613 count. It is seven themes. So Rabbi Josi would answer us, if we asked Rabbi Josi, hey, how could you say it's, that the sorcery is included, it'll make it eight? He'd say, no, it comes under the violation, under the heading of idolatry. So under idolatry, he would have many more commandments than the position of the other rabbis who disagreed with him. Okay, so you can't attack him from that standpoint. He would say, just like you have under setting up courts, you have several commandments, and under stealing, you have 18, 25, whatever it might be, so I too have under idolatry, I have several. That's not a problem, because that's the way the system works. Okay? So you can't attack him from that standpoint. And his argument from a logical standpoint, if you read the verse in the Bible, it would seem that it's inescapable. And the question that we have to raise is, what is the opinion? How do the other rabbis, the other position, how do they defend themselves against his logic? We, as I said, the prevailing opinion, Maimonides, does not accept the Rabbi Josi's opinion. He accepts the general opinion of the scholars, of the rabbis of the Talmud, know that even if a society did commit these things, they have mediums, they have seances, and all these different things, predictors of the future, etc., they're not in violation of the seven commandments. But how would they deal with this verse in Deuteronomy 18:12? After all, you're dealing with a verse in the Bible, it's a serious matter. You can't just talk it away. Okay. If anybody has any suggestion, I would be glad to listen. If not, I will tell you what my own opinion is. All right?
We'll let you give your opinion.
Okay. All right.
All right. You just wanted to make sure we were still alive.
Yes.
All right. We are here.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. Now this is it's a little bit technical, okay? But we're going to make a dash for it, all right? When you have a rule of the oral law system, you have to be able to analyze the rule and understand precisely its framework. Now the rule that everybody accepted is that there is no such thing as punishment in the Bible without previous sin. Okay? Now, there are certain statements about, there are certain statements, certain certain principles that we use in analyzing the Bible. Some of those principles are strictly textual, which means to say they're principles that relate to how the structure of the Bible is. It doesn't mean, they're not principles that relate to reality. For instance, you're all familiar with a concept that there is no order in the biblical stories. There's no order. Now, that is a principle that has to do with the text of the Bible itself. It doesn't have to do with reality. Reality, there's an order of events. There's a chronological order of events. But it's stating that the way the Bible recounts these events is not necessarily in the historical, chronological order. Okay? So you can't deduce historical chronology from the Bible. That's not the purpose of the Bible, and the Bible, the text of the Bible is not conforming to that system. So this statement about order in the Bible is a statement about the biblical text. It's not a statement about reality. Now, the question arises, we have this formula. The formula states there is no such thing as punishment without previous sin. Now, the question is this. In the Bible, you have two different types of texts. You have one kind of text that deals with stories and events. All right? We're all familiar with that, stories and events. Then you have a text that deals with the legal system of the Bible. There is a very heavy rule in the Torah, especially in Leviticus. Leviticus is completely the laws about, for instance, about the about the diseases, the blemishes on the on a person's skin. I mean, there's a whole of laws of how, you know, what is considered a, when is a nega. The it's called in Hebrew, it's called a nega. It means a blemish, a certain kind of blemish on the skin, which has halachic value. There's a whole system over there. The laws of uncleanliness, the laws of kosher food, all these various systems in the Torah. Then the laws of punishment, the laws of the of Sanhedrin, you know, the various violations and the punishments that that are prescribed for these violations. Okay, so the system of the Torah, really, Torah takes two, has two different, if you want to break the Torah up, you can divide it into two different types of, statements. There are statements that are part of the legal system, and then there are statements that are part of the story, historical, but I don't mean the chronological history, but events, okay? The events of Abraham, the events of Isaac. This is not the part of the legal system, okay? But where the Bible says he who is a murderer should be put to death, that's part of the legal system. All right? So the Bible is composed of two separate units, so to speak. Now, this is the question. All the scholars agree that there is no such thing as punishment without previous sin. But the question is that in reference to the part of the Bible that deals with punishment and that deals with law, or is that a general principle throughout the Bible, even when we read about events? Okay? That was the argument between Rabbi Josie and the other scholars. Rabbi Josie maintained it's a general principle, and even if you're reading about events, then this principle has to apply. Whereas the other scholars of the Talmud agreed that that principle is true, but they said that is only if you're dealing with the verses that do with law. There we say, if we find a punishment, if the Bible says that if you do such and such, that you should be executed, then we say that implies a previous crime. Okay? But it doesn't necessarily mean that every area in the Bible where the Bible describes a punishment that befell a certain people, that this rule still applies. This rule is a holistic rule. It's a halachic rule. It's a rule that has to do with the Bible system of law. But it's not a general rule that you can apply to the other parts of the Bible that deal with events that took place. Okay. So therefore, what the other scholars would maintain is as follows. Yes, it's true that these nations definitely lived a depraved existence. And the Bible is describing their depravity and how, you know, and all the things they did, all the violations that they did, which basically means that the society reached a level that they weren't deserving anymore of living in their land. But it doesn't necessarily mean that each one of these things that they did was a violation of the Ben Noah system. Okay? What the Bible is stating is that in other words, the Bible here is discussing a level of philosophical depravity that these people had reached. And because of that, God, in his judgment, removed them. They weren't deserving any more of this land, and he removed them from the land, and instead he placed the Israelites in that land. That is not a legalistic kind of judgment. That's not discussing the seven laws are. Okay, what it's discussing is, it's true, these things are abomination. But just because these things are abomination, and just because people that live that way don't deserve any more to live in the land of Israel, doesn't mean that is not a method of arriving at the seven basic laws. The seven basic laws have to stem from the system of law of the Torah. And in the system of law, in the system of law, these things are not mentioned as part of the seven. Let me give you an example, okay? Make it maybe clarify it a little more. I know at this point it sounds confusing. There are the six. Let's take the 613. Okay, you know right away, 613 doesn't mean that a Jew does 613 commandments even in his lifetime, because many of those commandments have to do with various areas, kings and priests, etc., etc. But there are some 80, 90, 100 commandments or so that are a part of a person's everyday life. Now, Nachmanides explains, he says, and I may have mentioned this before, that a person can keep all these commandments and yet live a depraved existence. There's no commandment against being drunk. A person can get up, prays, does his minimal prayer, you know, and then the rest of the day he spends as a drunkard, okay? Or he takes drugs. There's nothing, nowhere in the Bible says you shouldn't take drugs. A person is a drug addict, okay? So Nachmanides explains that this person, while he can break a single law, he'll make sure he does not break a single law of the Torah. Right? Certainly before the rabbis added their injunctions, which of course they have a right to do, but certainly before that, it was much easier to keep the basic 613. A person can spend his day indulging in gluttony. There's nowhere in the Bible that says he shouldn't be a glutton. Correct? So a person can spend his day in gluttony, in drunkenness, in depravity. According to the biblical law, it would be very easy. Before there was a Ben Israel was not permitted to marry more than one wife, but before that injunction, which was not a biblical injunction, he could have many wives. He can overindulge in sexuality. And he could spend his whole life basically like an animal and yet be very careful to keep every one of the 613. Now, is he in violation of the 613? No. In God's eyes, is this person a worthy individual? Is he close to God? Does he have any relationship with God? The answer is obviously no. He doesn't. Okay? So, as we said many times, the Torah tries to guide a man to perfection. God legislated 613 commandments, which are beautiful vehicles of perfection, but a person, if he intends to, wishes to, we can avoid all of those and be depraved. So that's exactly what the rabbis are saying here, the ones that disagree with Rabbi Josi. Here is describing the fact that these societies were so steeped in their primitive mystical involvements to the point where they were an abomination. necessarily mean they violated the seven laws. That doesn't necessarily mean that these things constitute the seven laws. The seven laws is a system which is a when Noah is supposed to establish for his society, and they are seven laws. He's not supposed to establish. There's no law that says you cannot be depraved, just like there's no law in the 613 for the Ben Israel. So therefore, what they say is you cannot deduce from these statements anything about the structure of the seven laws. The structure of the seven laws must come from that portion of the Bible that deals with legislation, okay? The legislative portion of the Bible. This is not legislative. This is a part of the Bible that deals with events and deals with things that God did and deals with peoples that were depraved. This is not the way to derive your seven laws. Seven laws is a legislative system, and this is not a legislative text, okay? This is a text that is dealing with a judgment of God because these people were depraved, and it proceeds to tell you the manner in which they were depraved. And there's no doubt that if a Ben Noah was involved in these things, and that was his life, his life was seances and superstition and magic, obviously this person is not close to God. And if the society did reach that level of depravity, God would consider them as unworthy. Yes.
Got about a minute.
Okay. So God would consider them as unworthy. But just because they are unworthy, it doesn't mean that the legislative system should incorporate those things which they did and render them unworthy. Okay? That is the argument of those who argue against Rabbi Josi. All right? Okay, I hope if there are any questions, I'd like you to think it over. And there is a fine distinction here. And if there are any questions, please raise them at our next session. Okay? Thank you, everybody, and good night.